My name is Julie, and I am a bulimic and a very compulsive overeater. And I'm very grateful to be on this meeting today. I thank you. I thank Melanie for asking me to speak. I absolutely love, love, love Melanie. And she's helped me so much, so very much. I listened to this podcast twice. I listened to two speakers on the podcast. I was blown away by the quality and how much identification I had. And I don't mean the sound quality. I just mean that the speakers both talked about getting a higher power. And that's, for me, that's been the essence of my program is, that's how I began to recover. I didn't come in here. I wasn't looking for a diet club. I was looking for the pain to stop. And I was looking to, for the binging to stop and the purging to stop and the secrets to stop. I always have been a very, a prevaricator. I have always lied, and I have, and I, for years and years, I had a secret life of eating. Prior to that, I had a secret life of not just eating. I also had a secret life of drugs and alcohol, but that's for another program. But it is really what got me in here was the fact that I had gotten sober in AA, and I knew I needed something else because what happened to me was very much like that game that you play at a carnival, the whack-a-mole, where you hit it over here and something pops up over there, and et cetera, et cetera. And I tamped down the compulsion to drink and drug, and suddenly I was binging and purging more than I ever had before. I mean, I was binging and purging at least 5 and sometimes 15 times a day. And I never held down a meal. And I never. And I would, I mean, I would have a decide, well, I'm just gonna have an apple. And then the apple, I'm sorry if I can't discuss food. Thanks, Melanie. It's okay. Okay. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I would have an apple. I would start with an apple, and I'm like, oh, it's just an apple. It's just a glass of water, and suddenly I'm off to the races. It's like it's the theory of the first bite gets you hooked or whatever, but the first drink gets you drunk in AA. And I once I put a substance into my body when I'm not spiritually fit, I can't tell you what's going to happen. I just know that it's going to end up with me feeling miserable, exhausted, and very sad. And to tell you a little bit about how this whole shenanigans started, and I don't say that I said that with levity. I don't mean to put this down because this is a very serious illness and a very serious disease, and I've got it. And I respect the hell out of it because if I don't, it will kill me. I had a very thin mother, very thin, and she would weigh me and punish me according to the number on the scale. And I was rewarded if it was good. And I learned from an early age, I started stealing her laxatives and binging. And I remember thinking, even at like that tender age of 14, like, well, I'm just doing this. My mother won't let me do this, so I'm doing it, and it escalated into not just binging and purging, but stealing. When I got to college, and I was the first week, they called me. I had this guy on my floor who called me lettuce, or called me lettuce or some leaf or something, leaf, I think, because all I did was eat lettuce that first week because I was so terrified. I was so terrified that I would binge, and I would start it while I was there in Pennsylvania, as opposed to being where I grew up in New York. But it transferred. Wherever you go, there you are. And my disease transferred with me. And And I had my first stay in a in an inpatient facility for my eating disorder when I was 19 years old. And to show you how old I am, I was 19 years old, and it was the very, very early 80s, and they didn't know what to do with people with eating disorders. I don't know what they had in the way of treating people with compulsive eating disorders, but I was identified as a bulimic, and I was with three other anorexics on a psych ward in Philadelphia. And that was my first inpatient stay. And then a few years later, I went to I think it was like the very first Renfrew, and then after that to one here in New York City. And not once in any of those three hospital stays did I ever hear about Overeaters Anonymous. Not once. Granted, it was 30 years ago, more, but and I hope things are different now. I really hope things are different, but I don't know. But all I know is that nothing worked for me. No therapy, no inpatient hospital stays. No white knuckling it and asking whatever. I don't even know what I believed in before I came into program. I don't know if I really even did believe in anything. I didn't know that there was this loving power, this source of great power that could help me as long as I got out of my own way. And that's how I look at my higher power, is that if I You know, the big book says that I'm going to try to run the show. I am a control freak. I mean, it's right there in print in the big book about how I'm the actor, the director. If you know, everyone would just listen to me, then everything would be fine. But that never happens. Even if anybody ever listens to me, which is very rare, except a couple of my sponsees really do listen very well. You know who I'm talking about. You're on this meeting. But I if I remember to turn my will and my life over to the care of this power, I'm going to get helped throughout the day. So just to fast forward to where I am now, so then I come back to the God piece, because that's really important. I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 2004. I was a few years sober. And a woman came up to me at my very first meeting, and she recognized me from AA, and she literally put her hand in mine, and she had this beautiful soft hand, and I squeezed it, and she said, "You never have to live like this anymore." And it just like it hit me, it just warmed me. And from that day until 4 years later, I didn't binge or purge, and I did what she told me to do. I worked the steps with her. I prayed in the morning when I woke up. I prayed at night when I went to sleep. And I reached my hand out to other people and went to meetings. And somewhere, I don't remember exactly what happened, but 4 years after I put down the binging and purging, I picked it up again. And I remember that I didn't tell her for like a week, because as quickly as I picked my addiction back up is as quickly as I picked up the lying again. And I pretty much came right back. And then I was abstinent again for 5 years. And at that time, I had switched sponsors. I think she was still sponsoring me in OA, and I had a fairly new AA sponsor. And that AA sponsor said to me, "Oh, you don't need to go to Overeaters Anonymous if you have God in AA." And I was like, "Yay!" Because there were no cute guys in there were no, you know, like I at that time I thought that AA was more fun than OA. That was just what I thought. I was immature, and I I don't know. I didn't, I had gotten a little bit disconnected and I picked up. And then I stayed out for 6 years. And in it over the course of those 6 years, a lot happened. But in 2019, I walked back in the doors of Overeaters Anonymous, and I had moved to an apartment. And interestingly, the meeting that I had gone to, I used to go to in the morning, had moved to a new location on 68th Street, and I lived on 70th Street. It was so God. It was just like I could walk out the door of my building and walk in like the back door of the church, and there you were, you beautiful people. There you were, and some of the face, most of the faces were the same people, and for that I was really comforted. I found that very comforting, and I started counting days again, and I was so grateful that I had the gift of coming back, and I had that gift of desperation because I just didn't want to be sick and suffering anymore. And I didn't want to have that secret life anymore. Excuse me. Sorry. Around that same time, right before I came back to OA, I came back to AA because I had a relapse in AA after my 17th year, and or during my 17th year. And at that time, my kids were fighting over their father's inheritance, and my mother was dying, and I was her caregiver, and I had a full-time job that was pretty busy, and blah 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 blah. What I didn't have was I had disconnected from God. I wasn't praying in the morning and in the evening. I wasn't making outreach calls. I wasn't doing really any of that. So I picked up pills, and then and I was already out in OA. And so I first came back to AA, and then I was in AA for about 3 or 4 months, and I started talking to my AA sponsor about coming back to OA. And I love my AA sponsor was like, "Well, I can't help you. You know I can't. You have to go there. You have to go and get help with like-minded people." You know, like she knew she couldn't help me. And interestingly, there was something that happened to me today, where I was talking to a woman in this program. And she was talking to me about wanting to lose weight. And I don't really have experience with wanting to coming into this program and wanting to lose weight. I just don't. I have experience with wanting to stop binging and purging, but I do not have experience. But I knew right away, and I gave her two names of two lovely women. And I said, "Here are two women that I want you to call." Because, and I love that example of my sponsor saying that to me, and then I said this to someone else, was just that I most of everything that comes out of my mouth, I have heard from one of you very strong, valuable people. It's been something that I've heard in a meeting, I've read it in our literature, somebody said it to me. None of these things are my original ideas, they're just not. And I'm grateful for that. I really am, because I'm able to carry this message loud and clear because I heard it there. I heard it from her and it worked for me. So now I'm going to tell that one. And that's just how this works. This program is nothing short of miraculous at just the whole inner wheels, you know, the inner cogs of the wheel of how this works. It's just one person sharing their experience with another person. So I came back to, I've been in OA, and then the pandemic happened, and that six person small meeting I was going to at 7:15 a.m. grew on Zoom to 200, you know, over 200 people. And that's my morning. That's my home group, is the 7:15 a.m. morning meeting. I see a couple of faces on here from that meeting. I'm so excited. So now you know a little bit about me, and I want to talk about how the Big Book has changed my life. The Big Book and the program.
5 minutes.
Good timing. Big Book and the program of Overeaters Anonymous, how it works, because I work it. Rarely, it says in our Big Book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. The thoroughly is the key word there. It's not like half-assed followed our path. It's not like had a toe in the water followed our path. It's like thoroughly. And I know. I just told you about three massive relapses that I had. I know how not to work this program, and I know how to work this program. And I know that if I don't utilize the tools of this program and this and work the steps with my sponsor and help other people and read the Big Book with people who ask me to read it with them and come to meetings and follow a food plan, which just for me, mine is, I believe every person's food plan should be discussed, not with themselves, but with a sponsor or another woman, or excuse me, another person or another few people. You know, add in a nutritionist and a therapist, you know, you've got yourself a recipe for success. But I think that employing all of those tools and using everything that's offered to us is what's worked for me. I know that if I last weekend, you know, the busiest, biggest food weekend of the entire year, I didn't go to an OA meeting all weekend. And I had people here, and and then we went there. I mean, it was just, and I remember somebody said to me, years, many, many years ago, I ran into this guy on the street, goes, "Why haven't I seen you at any meetings?" I'm like, "I've been too busy." And he said, "If you're too busy, you're too busy." I was just like, "What?" But if you think about it, if you're too busy to take care of yourself, then you're too busy. So I need to remember first and foremost to take care of myself. I am recovering. I have recovery for over 4 years this time. I still make mistakes. I still act out on my character defects. I still sometimes think I know better. I do have the clarity, and I think that recovery brings us and provides us with that clarity to see when we make mistakes. And I mean, I kind of am laughing at myself, but not in a good way. Like, I think it's strange that with everything that comes out of my mouth, particularly when I'm speaking, I still went 5 days without a meeting last week. And that's, I don't recommend it. So going to meetings is very important. Because, you know, I've been surrounded by food. There's like last night and the night before, I was at like things in the city, and I had and I was just like after the weekend before, and then just been so much food around. And there's always food around. I'm not particularly tempted by food. I'm not at this point. Thank you to God. But I still am, you know, looking at what she's eating and, you know, like thinking, "Oh, I wish I could eat that," like, you know, but I don't eat like that anymore, you know? And so, I need to stay here, and I need to come here, and I need to remember what I read here, particularly. I think the Big Book is chock full of,
Minute.
and in fact, if anybody wants any information, there's going to be a Big Book study at the Wilson House in April. I'm happy to, if you hit me up, I'll send you some information. But the Big Book says, one of my favorite lines is, we have ceased fighting anyone or anything. I can't be fighting, because if I'm fighting, it reminds me of fighting my mother, who I love and took care of in the end, but because of the steps, I forgave her. But I can't be fighting. I have to be find the gratitude in my heart to embrace this program, because it's just such an amazing gift, and my life has changed all because of you guys. Thank you.